There is a beach in Cuba where the sand still holds a name that makes old men go quiet. Playa Girón. On April 17, 1961, 1,400 men waded ashore in the darkness and tried to end a revolution. They were back in American custody within 72 hours. What happened in between? And what was decided in a White House Situation Room 48 hours before a single boot touched Cuban sand is the story that 65 years later, neither government has been willing to fully tell. To understand why the Bay of Pigs invasion failed requires understanding what it was designed to be. This was not an impulsive military adventure. The operation, codenamed Zapata, had been planned for 18 months under Eisenhower and inherited by Kennedy when he took office in January of 1961. The Central Intelligence Agency had recruited, trained, and equipped an exile force drawn from Cuban nationals who had fled Havana after Fidel Castro's rebels descended from the Sierra Maestra Mountains in 1959. These men were organized into Brigade 2506, named after the serial number of a recruit who died during training. They trained in Guatemala, in Nicaragua, in the swamps of South Florida, places where American involvement could be plausibly denied and quietly funded. The CIA's own internal estimates, declassified in 1998, projected an 80% operational success rate, provided that two conditions were met. The brigade would need to land at a defensible position, and Castro's Air Force would have to be destroyed on the ground before the first man hit the beach. The landing site chosen was the Bay of Pigs, a crescent-shaped inlet on Cuba's southern coast, surrounded by the Zapata Swamp. The CIA considered it ideal. The swamp would channel Castro's ground forces through narrow roads. The beach was accessible by sea, and a small airstrip at the settlement of Playa Girón offered the possibility of establishing a provisional government on Cuban soil within hours of landing, which would then appeal to the international community for recognition and support. What the CIA's operational planners had failed to properly account for was the depth of the swamp's loyalty. Not the geography, but the people who lived there, charcoal burners and fishermen, who had received schools and clinics from the revolution, and who would not stay silent when 1,400 strangers arrived in the dark. The airstrikes were supposed to come first. On April 15, 1961, 2 days before the landing, B-26 bombers, painted to disguise them as Cuban Air Force defectors, flew from Nicaragua and struck three of Cuba's military airfields. The goal was to eliminate Castro's small fleet of combat aircraft, including the British-supplied Sea Furies and the American-built T-33 jets that had been repurposed into the Revolutionary Air Force. The strikes caused damage but did not finish the job. Castro's Air Force was wounded, not destroyed. A second wave of airstrikes was scheduled for April 16th, the night before the invasion landing, and then President Kennedy canceled them. The exact reasoning behind this decision remains, 65 years later, a contested historical question. What the declassified record shows is this. On the evening of April 15th, United Nations Ambassador Adlai Stevenson stood before the General Assembly and denied that the United States had any involvement in the bombing raids. He had been told this by the State Department. He did not know it was false. When photographs of the disguised American bombers appeared in international newspapers hours later, Stevenson was personally humiliated and furious. He went to Secretary of State Dean Rusk. Rusk went to Kennedy, and Kennedy, facing an international credibility crisis on his 100th day in office, canceled the second airstrike wave to preserve, as one memo put it, the appearance of non-involvement. The CIA's Richard Bissell, who had designed the operation, argued that cancellation was catastrophic. Kennedy overruled him. What the planners had built the entire operation around air superiority was gone. The brigade's boats carrying men and ammunition arrived at the Bay of Pigs on the morning of April 17th, guided by underwater lights and facing a Cuban militia that had already been alerted by the failed bombing raids. The element of surprise, which was never as robust as the CIA had claimed, was now entirely gone. Castro was not sleeping in a Havana palace waiting for reports. He was already moving. Within hours of the landing, he personally directed the defense, coordinating his Sea Fury aircraft against the brigade's supply ships. The Houston was hit and forced aground. The Rio Escondido, carrying 10 days of ammunition and communications equipment, was sunk by Cuban rocket fire. Brigade 2506 was ashore, surrounded by swamp, cut off from resupply, and fighting without the air cover that was supposed to be the foundation of the entire plan. The men of the brigade fought for 3 days. By the accounts of survivors, men who are now in their 80s and 90s, some of whom have given testimony that was incorporated into the CIA's own internal postmortem, they fought expecting American air support that never came. Some reported watching American jets from the USS Essex carrier group circle at the edge of Cuban airspace and turn back. Others described receiving radio communications that promised reinforcements. There is still disagreement about what those communications said and who authorized them. What is not in dispute is that no American military force intervened. On April 19th, the brigade surrendered at Playa Girón. 1,109 men were captured. More than 100 had been killed. Within 18 months, they were ransomed back to the United States for $53 million in food and medicine. Here is the detail that sits unresolved in the historical record and that the CIA's own archivists have never fully explained. In the 1998 release of Bay of Pigs documents the most comprehensive declassification in the operation's history, a CIA internal cable designated TX-1162 was referenced in the operational log index but was not included in the released material. The index entry describes it as a communication transmitted on the evening of April 16, 1961, hours after Kennedy's cancellation of the second airstrike wave and hours before the brigade boats reached the Cuban coast. The cable subject header, visible in the index, reads, Authority Confirmation, Strike Window, Alternative Assets. The document itself has never been released. The CIA's response to Freedom of Information requests has been that it is currently under review for potential declassification. It has been under that review since 2003. What TX-1162 contains, whether it represents a final CIA attempt to restore the canceled airstrikes through alternative means, whether it authorized some other form of military action that was never executed, or whether it is an administrative communication of no operational significance, is not known. Its absence from the record is a gap. It is the kind of gap that history creates when decisions are made at the edge of what governments are willing to admit. Castro's victory at the Bay of Pigs transformed the revolution. Before April of 1961, there were elements within Cuba, business owners, professionals, some military officers, who believed the revolution might moderate, might negotiate, might find some accommodation with Washington. The invasion destroyed that possibility. Castro had proof, displayed to the world on the captured brigade members and the ruins of their American-supplied equipment, that the United States had tried to overthrow his government. He used it. Cuba's alignment with the Soviet Union deepened immediately. By October of the following year, Soviet missiles were being installed on Cuban soil, and the world stood at the closest it has ever come to nuclear war. For the Caribbean, the Bay of Pigs was not only Cuba's story. It was a demonstration, witnessed by every island government from Kingston to Bridgetown to Port of Spain, of how the United States related to Caribbean sovereignty. The lesson was not subtle. A Caribbean government that chose a political path Washington disapproved of would face not diplomatic pressure, but covert paramilitary action, organized, trained, and funded from American soil. This was not a hypothetical warning, it was an event. The men who led independence movements across the Caribbean in the 1960s, Michael Manley in Jamaica, Eric Williams in Trinidad, Forbes Burnham in Guyana, all cited Cuba's experience as formative in how they understood the limits of sovereignty in a hemisphere dominated by American power. The brigade veterans, the men of 2506, never stopped believing they had been betrayed, not by Cuba, which they accepted as an enemy, but by the government that trained them, promised them air support, sent them to a beach, and then canceled the operation that was supposed to make their landing survivable. Pepe San Roman, the brigade's military commander, was captured at Playa Girón. After his release, he spent years in Miami, struggling with what he called the weight of leading men into a plan that had been abandoned by the people who created it. He died in 1989, never having received the explanation he asked for. 65 years on, the beach at Playa Girón is a museum. Cuban schoolchildren visit it on field trips. The Bay of Pigs is not a wound in Cuba's national memory. It is a trophy documented, curated, and displayed as proof that a small Caribbean island defeated the most powerful nation on Earth. The men of Brigade 2506, the survivors who are still alive in Miami and New Jersey and wherever else the Cuban exile community put down roots, remember it differently. As the place where history turned, as the beach where they were left. And TX-1162 sits somewhere in a CIA archive still under review. What does it mean that the most powerful country in the world has spent 65 years managing what it will say about 72 hours on a Cuban beach? And what does it mean that Cuba, which has every reason to call this its greatest victory, has built a monument to the men who came to destroy the revolution, preserving their weapons, their uniforms, their propaganda leaflets under glass? History in the Caribbean is never simple. It is always about who gets to own the story of what happened. Who frames the failure and who frames the win? At Playa Girón, both sides have been telling different versions of the same 3 days for 65 years. The beach doesn't choose. The water doesn't remember. But the archive does, or it's supposed to. The missing cable is the gap between what governments decide to preserve and what actually happened in the room where the decision was made. That gap is the real history of the Bay of Pigs, and it belongs, whether Washington and Havana like it or not, to the Caribbean. What was actually in TX-1162? And does it matter now, 65 years later, whether we ever find out?